This is from the ancient Pali text I'll talk about during my presentation. It says, let all beings be happy, weak or strong, of high, middle, or low estate, small or great, visible or invisible, near or far away, alive or still to be born. May they all be entirely happy. Let nobody lie to anybody or despise any single being anywhere. May nobody wish harm to any single creature out of anger or hatred. Let us cherish all creatures as a mother her only child. May our loving thoughts fill the whole world, above, below, across, without limit, a boundless good will towards the whole world, unrestricted, free of hatred and enmity. Now we have a silent. Well, I'm very pleased to introduce our speaker today, Dave Zakim. He's given us some notes here to help remember all the things he's been involved in around the world, and let me recap those. He's been in the Peace Corps four times in Somalia, Swaziland, Belize, and Guatemala. From 1974 to 1978, he was the director of an international school in Iran. He's most recently, I understand, been in Laos teaching a preschool for 6 years, and he'll be going back there to teach for at least another two more years. And he has also taught preschool in Monterrey, Mexico. And going back sometime, for those of you who've been at Prairie, somewhat newer in Prairie, Dave has visited us many times in the past. He's been given a number of programs for us, ones on Africa, Islam, Sufism, Indian cultures. He did a winter solstice program and also spoke about Zoroastrianism. So he's really a treasure to have him come back and tell us about his most recent experiences. Dave?
Well, it's good to be back. I was out in the United States this last time for 3 years. I had the option to come back every summer, kind of a paid leave. But I just was kind of where I was, and I was happy with where I was. I took the summer off and do my own thing. But this summer, I just felt I needed to come back for that. Somewhere else. So I thought, well, it's good to come back and see people. So I thought, well, this is a good opportunity. And Ruth called in to do something on prayer. And I thought, well, that will help because things together. Definition for me. I was just kind of free floating. I had a great time. I teach preschool. School that I can do 100% what I do. In a lot of presentations in Southeast Asia on the latest understandings of the brain and learning. And so I'm putting it into practice. Some schools are talking about it, but they're not doing it. So I get a lot of visitors to come to our program to see what we're doing and putting things into practice. That's the hardest thing to talk about, but really putting into practice. So it's been an exciting time, and so I can get some perspective and talk about things from afar rather than right there. So this is a good opportunity for me, so I'm looking forward to doing it. I have some things on the table over there which you might have seen coming in. My presentation, I'll show you, there are a lot of pieces. Together, but there's a lot to talk about, and one of the I could is Buddhism itself. There's a lot of things about Buddhism, so I'll be bringing up some things about Buddhism, but it's not going to be all about Buddhism. As I put in, I don't know if this went into the Prairie Fire or not, but I was going to relate Buddhism, animism, tribalism, capitalism, and socialism. All the isms are there. So this program will be about all those bits and pieces of all those and how they influence Lao culture today and how they've influenced it in the past. So that will be kind of lots of things, but it will be all Lao culture. And as the world is today, many things tend to be fragmented unless you really sit down and try to make some connections. That's why when I asked about songs, I wanted to have Magic Penny, because I felt that was always one that I felt just had some bringing things together and really looking at the world. And I think They were able to get Mike Briggs to play. And the closing song was one of my favorites too, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which I always liked Mike's version of that. So I'm very pleased we're able to have that. So it's a good day for me too. I can really have some of these things I really enjoy too. So we'll start, and I'll kind of roll through. It'll be just some interesting highlights, but like I say, they will kind of come together. In 1975, as most of you know, Laos was involved in what we call the Vietnam War. And Vietnam, it has a name in Laos, but what it's known informally as is the vertical runway. Now you might say, well, what's that mean? Well, the United States donated cement to rebuild their airport and put in a runway. And the government decided they needed this freedom monument more than the runway. So this is where all the cement went. This is a view of one of the main, used to be the main, it's a kind of a new street that's been under built since I've been there. The street used to be very narrow, and all these teak wood trees you see along the side there, about where the red motorcycle is where the road used to end, and it was built on top of the old city wall. And there was a big furor when I was first there that they wanted to widen this road and knock out one of those rows of trees, which they did. But the road was very dangerous. It was not meant for vehicle traffic. And so this was a big improvement when I was first there, but it was built right on top of the old city wall. Now, problem with the old city wall is, when the water would flood from the Mekong, that was one thing. But the major floods were water being trapped behind the city wall and flooding the village from behind. And so they put in all this irrigation stuff now. So this is a part of the modernization that goes along. You lose some of your old kind of rustic beauty in your tradition, but it's facing a reality. It's environmentally friendly capital, but it isn't very busy. And as you can see, people ride their motorcycles on the sidewalk or wherever. There's a saying in Laos and Thailand both, that if you've been here too long, when you step off the curb on a one-way street, and you look six different ways. Because they're coming from all directions. This is Tat Luang. This is the number one temple in the whole country. This is a symbol of their culture and their country. And they used to have on their money, I have some of the money here, their symbol used to be Tat Luang, and over the top of it, a hammer and sickle, because they were socialist. They've taken the hammer and sickle off now. And when people ask me about socialism and the government, it's really a name, almost a name only, and some of the old bureaucratic cronyism that's there. You do not feel you're in a heavy, oppressive socialist country. It's just not there. You'll see the flags flying on National Day and Independence Day and Labor Day, which is there, as you know, most of you, May 1st and the rest of the world. And but you don't feel socialism. You feel more of Buddhism and one other thing, animism, which I'll talk quite a bit about today too. Buddhism is a main driving force, but animism is also there. This is kind of a typical shot of looking at some of the rice fields and the many other kinds of crops that they do grow in some of the areas. In Laos, there are kind of three different tribal groups. One lives way up in the mountains, one lives kind of in the middle lands, in the jungles and things, and the other ones live way down in the lowlands, which is where I am in Ventien, at the lowlands along the river. And this is kind of in the moderate range. You can see the mountains off in the background there. This is kind of in the mountainous area where a lot of what we know here, the Hmong people came here. Something like 150,000 people moved from Laos after the war and came to the United States or Canada or Europe. There's still a lot there. There are still people in refugee camps in Laos and Thailand. So it's the war is over, and they've settled some of the resistance movements that were taking place there. And I just saw this last year that the United States has finally recognized the role of the Hmong in the war and put a statue up in Washington, because they suffered under this dramatically. Again, some of the views of some of the traditional areas, what it looks like with the mountains always in the background. It's quite a scenic country. There are 30 rivers in Laos. So they have a lot of, it's like many cultures. They're depending on rainfall, but the people who live by the river, it's a very fish-oriented culture. This is the Plain of Jars. This is where the war was fought in Laos, the unknown war, the hidden war, that they would push during the rainy season. One group, the Vietnamese, would push in and cover the Plain of Jars. During the dry season, the U.S. and the Hmong people would reclaim the Plain of Jars. And it's just this long, flat area, mostly. And these are three areas where they have these old jars on them from ancient times that they're only speculating now what they were used for. They don't really know. Some are taller than I am. Some are small. And they think they probably were burial things of some sort. They're not sure. They're still working on lots of speculation where they came from, even where they, how they got them there. So it's a real open area yet for investigation. But this is the infamous Plain of Jars. That's also under speculation. Some say, well, this is local stone. Some say, no, this is a composite. In some cases, there are three distinct areas. But from what I've seen, it looks like local stone. But there are people open, extraterrestrials maybe, you know, always that comes in. There's a lot of kind of things. But the Buddhism is the state religion or national religion. There is a very interesting book by a man who's a scholar on Lao, lives in Hong Kong. It's called Buddhist Nation, Marxist State. And the conflict that they had on working some of these things out. Well, as I said, Buddhism is there, and I'll talk somewhat about that. But every morning around my house, the monks come by my house. The people go out and give them what they call sticky rice. They put rice, mostly rice, in a basket and food. Then later at 11 o'clock, they'll go down to the temple, and usually they'll bring in a meal for the monks anyway. But this is early in the morning. This is like 6 and 7 o'clock. The monks go around together. They have to get up at 4 and start meditating and then do some chanting. But this is very traditional there. This is Luang Prabang is the capital, the old capital of Laos. And this is a famous Buddha from that area. And putting the hands up here means do not be afraid. And this is the famous Buddha from Luang Prabang. There are two Buddhas there that are very popular. This one, do not be afraid. And another one where the Buddha puts his hands down, which means we need rain. So rain is very important there. So. This is the old traditional dress of the people in Laos at the turn of the century. And pretty much it's the same. This is more of city dress and not the tribal. So this is pretty much of what people a lot wear today. When the revolution took place in 1975, they forbade the women to wear these skirts. Now the women wear skirts and then a polyester top or something. But this is all silk. But when the revolution took place, the government said no more Lao traditional skirts. They had to wear khaki skirts, military. And that wasn't working out. A lot of this stuff wasn't working out, and now they wear silk skirts again. No more the khaki. Talking a little bit about Buddhism, this is up in the capital, the old capital city. This is a famous temple. And when you go in, many of us probably think of Buddhism as in looking for enlightenment. Or in the Mahayana, what they call Mahayana Buddhism, looking for enlightenment or reincarnation. In Lao Buddhism, it's called Theravada Buddhism, it's you die and that's it. But the problem is, when you die, you most likely go to one of the eight layers of hell. It's a very, to me, traditionally Christian type of focus on I'm worried about going to hell. And so people, when they give the offerings in the morning, that's supposed to be you're just giving offerings, like my reading was, be good, be kind to the world. But these people down inside are worried about going to hell. In this temple, the walls are covered with all of the torments of hell. That's all that's inside of this temple. All of the torments of hell. And there's some of them are pretty lurid. Not in this temple. Well, heaven is there, but they are really focused on, the Lao people and the Thai people, pretty much, but Lao more because they're not so exposed to outside. They are very exposed, they're very concerned about hell. That's inside. They go to the temple, and my assistant, I have a Lao assistant. There's a picture of my preschool group over here on the table. My Lao assistant, been with me for 6 years. fantastic woman, has kids in her 20s and everything, really enlightened, been to the United States. But she says, you know, when I go to the temple every 2 weeks, they don't go on Sundays and that kind of thing. They just go when the moon is right. That's when they go. She says, I need to go today because today is the day I really can give lots of food to my relatives who probably are at some layer of hell, to give them nourishment to move them up. That is their concern. There's more, I mean, in society you'd like to feel there's more, but they didn't know who the Dalai Lama was where I lived. Anyone I talked to, no one knew who the Dalai Lama was. That's kind of what we think of as Buddhism. We had scholars come there, Buddhist scholars come and teachers to talk about Buddhism, about the higher levels of Buddhism. All the room was filled with foreigners. There weren't any Lao people there. Most of the really enlightened Lao people had left in the 70s because of the government clean-out. So we have a new breed coming, and maybe this will come back. But right now, it's a very hell-focused kind of thing, and worrying about your own safety and your own security. That's Buddhism. Now, there's another thing. I think I'm going to have this. The tribal people. The tribal people practice animism. Most of the tribal people are not Buddhists. The Hmong, the black tie, all these people are not Buddhists. They are animists. Animism really is the underlying thing, even with the people I know. It isn't Buddhism. Buddhism, their concern is about staying out of hell. Animism is concerned about the natural environment, the natural world. And so the tribal people are animists. They are not Buddhists. These are some of the black tie people. The black tie people, the Thai group came down out of China. You can see kind of the Chinese looking things that they have on ornamentations and things. Two groups of people came down out of China. One came down Laos way and Thailand, and the other one went down Vietnam and Cambodia. And they speak different languages. They're so far apart now, they speak different languages and everything. The Lao and the Thai can speak together. They have a common roots. The Vietnamese and the Cambodians along the coast are the different origins altogether from way long time ago. So these people are up in the north of what they call the Golden Triangle, but they are animists. Animism is a belief in the natural spirits. No God. No. When you walk, there's a group called the Akka. When you walk into their village, there's a big archway of bamboo and things, and they'll have these little statues. Look like Polynesian statues there. And you've got to enter that way. Those statues are a sense of the spirits that they envision, how they look. I'll show you some other things up ahead, but that's kind of what it is. It's their interpretations of what the spirits look like. These, again, are the tribal people. Oh, it's a carrion yoke. So it's like that first one had a yoke, so you're carrying water and things and rice. Well, in some places they carry them across their head. These people carry the yokes. One of the bags I have over here is from this group. You'll see a lot of the coins and things on it. But there are 43 tribes of people in Laos. This is called the Yao people. Larry Narlik and his wife will come. Her name is Yao. These are the Yao people, and they wear this big red muff. That looks hot, and it is hot, because you'll see some of them, they're half naked taking these things off in daytime, but that's what they wear. And we have a bunch of them come down to our school and do things with us. So every day. Oh, the one wraparound thing is extra, but the red and the hat and that is every day. And it looks hot, and it is hot. Yeah, these came down also in that same group. Almost all of the tribal people have migrated down from China. These are down in the south of Laos, which is a little bit more connected to Cambodia and that, and they have a whole different kind of style. These are in Atapu. Atapu, when I was first there, you couldn't get there except if you flew in by helicopter. And now the roads are getting open to this area. So these are some of their styles, the men. This is a village up in the north. There's an infamous place called the Golden Triangle where all the opium is in China, Burma, and Laos. I haven't been to China yet, but I've seen it from across the border. And this village in the market, in the morning, from 6 to 8 in the morning, all the tribal people come in. They've walked quite a bit during the cool of the morning to get there, and they do all their trading. 8 o'clock, they go home. But it's really an amazing place in the morning. Not so much, well, it's kind of all over the place. There are different ones, but this one is kind of more remote. Down where I am, there are some areas that they do. It's easier to get across to Thailand. Talking about the natural spirits a little bit, this is a game they play here with a little rattan ball that is supposed to be in the old days. It's kind of like they did in Mexico. It's the good versus the evil. It's during when the change of the seasons and to bring rain and everything. So it'd always be one group of people go out and play the other group of people, a good versus evil thing. No one wins. It's just we hope that the side that's supposed to be the good side wins. Now they go out and do this every year, National Day and some other things. It's always the government versus the People's Party, you know, going out and playing these kinds of things. So it's not as popular. Actually, as you know from the World Cup stuff, soccer or football is very popular, and basketball is now becoming very popular in Laos. I'm one of the known people in the basketball world. So when I was first there, I was coaching four teams at our school. We have a very small school, but they all wanted to play basketball. So basketball is very big. Michael Jordan and people like that are more well-known than even George Bush. You know, it's like, this is another, yeah, it's a good thing. another of the natural things is working around the Mekong River. I don't have many shots of the Mekong, but the Mekong is a very strong presence there. And there are certain seasons during the year when they go and put flowers in the Mekong with incense on to float down the Mekong to ask blessings from the river. There's another time when they go out and do boat races. And this is when the rainy season's over and the river's very high, which it is here. They go out and race on the river. And these go back to some old traditions of dealing with the river, trying to conquer it, being one with the river and everything. So it's, again, animism. These are the big holidays. There aren't any big Buddhist holidays in Laos, except the one where they go to Tat Lawang, that temple I showed you first. Everything else is animist. They're all celebrating the rainy season, the river, the moon. The moon is the determining factor in what they do. And so there, the animist things are big. What they do during the times of the year, even the Buddhist holidays, they go out and build these stupas. These are little sand thing. This is about 2 feet high. They'll build it out of sand, and supposedly every grain of sand is supposed to be a prayer that goes to heaven. And so every time you build a stupa, all your work is going into something good, and you put all these little banners on and incense and little, these are little cutout figures of your family and things you can put on there as a kind of, they're helping you do this. So folks down there in hell, you know, we're helping you up here. Your figure's up here. You're getting some good stuff here. This is right on our temple. Neighborhood, let's say neighborhood association in Laos is built around the temple. So my temple is a center of my neighborhood. And my temple has really grown since I've been there. A lot of new buildings and things. But right on the temple ground, these people are offering water and fruit and incense to this tree right on the temple grounds. So this, when they come to go to the temple for their days, they will also come and offer to this tree. So that's how strong animism is. This tree and the spirits of the earth are really right together with the rest of it. So this is right on the temple ground. Whatever has an auspicious look to it, it is also connected with good luck, good fortune, winning the lottery, this kind of stuff. You know? So it has an auspicious kind of look to it. You know, they'll see a face in the tree or something, and so a tree that's picked is important in some way. I was at a ceremony. The ceremony is very popular, called the Basi. This man in the dark blue shirt on the left here had been in the temple. He was a novice when I met him. And all the novices there in the temples want to learn English. And I got to know him very well as a friend. I told him, I'm not going to be your teacher, I'm not going to be your benefactor, but I will be your friend. And I got to know him very well. He left the temple, and he became a monk, and then he left the temple, and he's going to go to New Zealand. he was going to go to school. This man down in the lower right there is a head of a school in New Zealand, and we'd worked it out. He could go to New Zealand for a year. So this is a bossy ceremony where they tie, they say your spirits are not together, and they need to bring your spirits together. So they tie strings on your wrist. You can see on their wrist, they're tying strings on. They're doing it to me too. I have one on my wrist here now. But also over on the table are some little medallion looking things. These are called spirit locks. And you wear those to get your spirit together. So whenever you're going on a trip or anything, you have a bossy. And you tie all these strings on. You'll see people on the buses or on the airplanes, all these strings on. They're getting their spirit together. So when you go traveling, your spirit isn't going to wander off somewhere and you're going to have problems. So at the end of our school year, we do a bossy. You can bring in the monks, or you can just have the village elder come in and do the opening thing. We just have the village elder come in because the monks are a separate thing. It's just extra to bring in the monks. They have nothing to do with this, really. It's an animist ceremony. So there I am, and I told KK at the beginning, in most things I do in Laos, it's very hot. You can see I look like my shirt is drenched, and it was so cooking there that... That beer, I don't drink a lot of beer, but boy, that night I was sloughing it down. Yeah. So this is another of the animist kind of ceremonies. In each, almost every yard in Laos and in Thailand, there'll be a spirit house. This is in the yard. That's a new one. Here's one that's underway. They'll put fruit in here, they'll put incense here, and it's for the spirits of your yard. And it's very important that the spirits of your yard are appeased. And so everyone will have these. And again, this is part of the animus thing. It's hard to really put everything in a real defined sense, but all these practices you see start adding up. And after I was there for a while, I said, this is not a Buddhist nation. This is an animus nation. It is the driving force of what they do. These are the two red-faced people, our grandpa and grandma, the founders, the original progenitors of the Buddhist nation. So these are celebrated, and that's their faithful dragon dog there. And so these are celebrated as the two of the beginning people of the Buddhist nation. All together, yeah. All together, separate again. But it's national. It's like, it's again, pre-Buddhism, pre-Buddhist. This is one of the famous temples in Vientiane. Many of the temples were not kept up during the government for a while there when they were not recognizing their traditions anymore. And so now they're getting refurbished. A lot of them becoming World Heritage Sites, so they are getting more attention. No, it's like stone, but it's just the way it looks. Yeah, a lot of things, again, this goes back to these things. A lot of these things have this natural look to it because that was what the original materials were. Then they started using more of the concrete and things. Now everything's made out of concrete. Oh, I had that one in before. This is the National Museum. And just to show you how things have changed, this used to be the National Revolution Museum. 2 years ago, they changed it back to it's the National Museum. The revolution is really over. They just don't have that in there anymore. So they want it to be more open, more accepting, so people will feel free to come there. The businesses will come there and things like this. So they're trying to move away from it. When I was first there, their friends, after the Soviet Union left, their friends were Vietnam and North Korea. Well, Vietnam is pretty much opening up, and North Korea is probably going to open up. So Laos needs to kind of reconnect with the world. So China is a big partner with them now. The Soviet Union, in 1990, at a school like ours, they had 1,000 children in their school, Soviets. Now they have the Russian school, they have 35 children, and diminishing fast. Because the Soviet presence, the Russian presence, they cannot afford to be in these places. We have one Russian child every year. We tend to have one Russian child in our school, and they're paying some extra money to come to our school. The great thing is we have this connection with the Russian people. We play volleyball with them. We play basketball with them. We have great barbecues and vodka slings with them and everything like that. So it's a great group of people, but they are really, They have these big buildings that they built during their big time, and now they're huddled and down one little corner of their compound because it's a fact. It's over for the Soviet Union, but the Russian presence is still there. But the revolution is there in name only. This is a cultural palace that was donated by the Chinese. As some of you might know, in almost every country around the world where China can have any influence, the way they get in is to build a culture palace or a hall or somewhere where you can hold meetings and things. We didn't have that in Laos. This place is fantastic. It's only 2 years old now. But China will go in and build you a stadium or something. And this is, now we know China is favorable to Laos because they've put a lot of money on them. It's bigger than the best hotel in town. But it's got Lao styling to it and everything, which some people now are going modern, this postmodern era. Well, they've kept some of the things intact. So the Chinese were very good at this. So this is a real welcome to the country. This is Main Street, main intersection, downtown Vientiane. Not really during busy time, but relative. You don't have a lot of traffic there. I have a mountain bike that I ride everywhere. I can go from where I live on the edge of town to downtown in 15 minutes on any given day, traffic or no traffic, you know. So it's a very, very small capital and very easy to get around. This is also a common way of transport, which is called the tuk-tuk. Little motorcycles with enlarged the backs and things on it. They're called tuk-tuks. There's also a company there called the tip-tuk. And we say, do not take the tip-tuks. Because sometimes you get overbalanced in these things. They do tip over. So just that name, tuk-tuk, doesn't sound the best thing there. Yeah. Oh, no pollution. There's nothing. I mean, the only pollution they have is people every afternoon burn their rubbish or their leaves and things in a lot of plastic bags. But we don't have any industry or anything at this point that's causing pollution. And so, they're so few. And we're right alongside the river, and it's really opens it up so it blows out. This is the road in front of our school. We're right on the edge of kind of the main part of the city, but it's dirt. When I was first there, 85% of the roads in the capital were dirt. And if they weren't dirt, they were like the worst potholes you could imagine. They had been asphalt once, but they were so bad that they were worse than dirt. But this is in front of our school, looking towards my house. Right straight up this road is the temple, the red roof right up the road is the temple. And I'm just past the temple where I live. But we're right on a dirt road. This is kind of our school grounds. It's kind of hard to get any sense of a school anymore as I was looking around here taking pictures because they have so many trees and things around. But you can see our football field here has been used quite a bit. It's the rainy season's just finishing when I took this picture. We need some more rain. But this is our school, and there's another picture that's a little bit better of kind of how the school, a lot of natural coverage. We have to redo the roof on this grass roof every couple years. So we have a walkway. Almost everywhere where you go outside the field is covered because the sun is so hot all the time. But we have two buildings like this, and I have a little building myself for the preschool. Then we picked up some neighborhood houses because we needed to expand, and so we picked up some houses that we're using too. So we're kind of really involved in the neighborhood. I live in the neighborhood right by the school. This little house here is just down two doors from the school. Traditional kind of Lao style, but not with a lot of money put into it, just with the bamboo rattan kinds of coverings. But where I live, you can have a house that's from the minister of something or other, minister of culture, spent $100,000 on this house, or you could have this one where they spent maybe a couple hundred dollars on it getting together. So we're in a real mixed neighborhood. We don't have the elite neighborhoods. We're all there together. And I have very, very poor people living right next to my house. But it's a real community. You don't feel the kind of isolation or separation so much in the classes. This is the wall around my house, and I painted it with all different kinds of things. And it's become a neighborhood landmark. They don't have house numbers or anything, or street names in a lot of these. So you kind of have to say, well, go down there and over there and over there. Now they say, go to the, first it used to be the go to the purple wall. So now I'm done. But my neighbors would come by, they would talk to me, and so it was really good to get to know the neighbors that way. But you have to have a post box. There is no mail delivery, unless FedEx or something like that. Then you have to have your street address. They'll know where you are. But other thing is post box otherwise. So a lot of people do not get mail. Yeah, that's the grandma and grandpa again, the red ones. And then there's Winnie the Pooh, Mickey Mouse, Butterfly. And on down by the door, which you can't see right here, I do have a Buddhist mandala. I've got Tat Luang, the temple, and some and Buddha lotus flowers and things on the other side. But I just shot this one. So I start out putting Buddhist things on, then I put a mixture of everything that would attract their attention. What are they going to recognize? Mickey Mouse. Winnie the Pooh is big around the world. And so I put those on and have the killer, Free Willy, killer whale, the sharks. And I have a dinosaur. Interesting. Kids would come by and say, oh, dinosaur, dinosaur, dinosaur. These old people would kind of walk by my house and they'd look at that and say, and I had the dinosaur buy some lotus flowers and some water and a turtle. They say, what kind of fish is that? The older people weren't into this exposure we have now to dinosaurs. And they just weren't exposed to dinosaurs. They were coming, what kind of fish is that? You know, it's kind of interesting. So we'd have some conversations about evolution and things, yeah? I use a lot of English. My Lao is the least of any of the languages that I've been in countries. Anytime I go to use Lao, someone would come by and want to use English. So I speak English most of the time. Now, when the older people come by, they don't know English, but I'll speak in Lao. But I have minimal Lao. English is now gone. The government has now said English is their official language for dealings. Vietnam is a big Francophone country. They held a big Francophone conference there a couple years ago. They have determined there are 200,000 French speakers left in Vietnam. That's 70 million people, 200,000 French speakers left. It's gone, folks. Lingua franca is English. This is another interesting thing. Up in the temples and around up in the north, we had a big war. And now, this is in the temple. This is a bell they ring on special ceremonies. This is the nose cone from one of the bombs that would drop and the bombies would open up. These are everywhere. Almost every temple has one of these in it. And you go up into the north, and you'll see people feeding their pigs. They have troughs made out of these shells from these bombs. They have fences made out of these things. They have houses made out of these things. I saw a man with a forge and an anvil. The anvil was made out of this stuff. The hammer was made out of this stuff. The tools he was making was out of these bombs. They said, you know, the war was bad. But now we have all this stuff that we can use. Yeah? So it's got a nice ring to it. Yeah? We go up there because I take the kids up there. They have a big drum. At 11 o'clock, they have to ring this big cowskin drum. And then in the morning, they usually do this. But we'll go up and kind of fool around with it. But it's got a nice, there's gongs that they use. Go bong. Then this has got a bang. But a nice, it's clearer than that. But a nice resonance to it. So, and they cut it so that it's the right pitch, you know. So it's, so anyway, that's president from the United States of America. And you go up there and some of these still have all these, you'll see these fences and they'll say, you know, U.S. government, whatever, you know, Texas, you know, arsenal or whoever made it still's on there. So all these things. This is the final one here. This is sunset over the Mekong. There's a big, kind of a big industry in Vientiane in the capital to go for sunset over the Mekong. So that's kind of a big part of the new tourist culture and the thing is to sit somewhere. There are a lot of sunset bars along the Mekong. So this is sunset over the Mekong. Most of the time, I'll have to tell you, I don't take many pictures anymore because I don't get intrusive as much as I used to. All of these have pretty much been postcards, except some of the stuff I've taken myself, but a lot of them have been. So, no, I was thinking about doing that, and I thought there's just a length of time that actually I've sent Ruth a couple on email, but I don't. It's just a simple little house, just a simple bungalow style. Well, it's an umbrella top. A deck. This is a sunset, you're sitting at a sunset bar like a deck looking over the water, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm trying to, imagine, you know, I'm known for the truth here, you know, let's, We have, I work with a group at school called Exploratory, and we bring in a lot of the parents who are working in that. We have a lot of people who are working in that field, and things are still in pretty good shape, but it's just at that point where we need to really have some conservation measures in place. And we worry now about China, because that's where the damming and all that stuff, and that's where a lot of the water comes out of. And so they worry about that, but they also worry about the people overusing the river and the pollution that is starting to take place there from stuff up, mostly upstream, because we don't have much in Laos, but upstream, Thailand's a big polluter, China is a big polluter. So right now we're at a point where it's still at a balance, but we are losing some things. In fact, we belong to the Mekong River Association, our country, and the headquarters has been in Cambodia for 5 years, now it's moving to Laos. So there is a big multinational kind of thing looking at that, and there are the Swedish government and many others who work in hydrology projects and things like this are also working to try to diversify how they're using the 30 rivers in Laos also. We have 30 rivers there. But it's how you affect everything. So it's how you use the water effectively is going to affect the Mekong. The Mekong, it's a whole other story I could talk about, yeah. So that's in a nutshell. But we can talk more if you need. You're in control there, Ken.
I'm in control.
Okay, I'll speak. Yeah, we is, that's Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, China, Burma, where the Mekong and Vietnam, where the river goes through. It's an association. The U.S. has other things, but they are not in it. It is our country, Laos. Laos has just now gotten into ASEAN, which is the Southeast Asian nations, Philippines and all that. That's been a big thing that they allowed them to come in. They also allowed Burma to come in a couple of years ago under great duress. But they're trying to integrate that area and not just all be these little splinters. So there is a work at move at integration because of the resources there that if Laos says, no more logging, because they're stripping the forest. The wood goes out through Thailand, goes out through Burma, goes to Japan, because Japan wants the wood. So there's illegal logging going on. The elephants are used for logging, and during the rainy season, because even vehicles can't get in there, they give the elephants speed, amphetamines, so they work better. Then the elephants are another thing under duress because of these pressures from the outside who want wood. In the world, there are what they call international schools, and that can be anyone can set up a school and just do whatever. And that's what our school was for many years. It actually started in 1974. Parents needed to have a school for their children, so parents taught in it. Whoever walked through town who spoke English, they tried to get them in to do something. Oh, can you teach math? Can you teach science? Can you? It's like, and that's how it was going until we came 6 years ago. A new director came. I came. People who had experience in these things. And we've got the school certified now, accredited through Europe and through the United States. If you walked in and went to the courses, you would basically be like an American or European school for the curriculum. We're a small school, about 160 kids. We can do, again, put into practice a lot of the things that we would like to put into practice. The alternative schools are doing. We're doing that in our school. But you could go from our school to Bangkok, to Malaysia, to Jakarta, and be lined up with their curriculum. Because many of our children and our parents are going to go to other schools in that area internationally. So we're under a certifying umbrella that certifies all these schools. So if you want to go to a school that's compatible with ours, you look for their certification, who they're certified by. And we're under the best, we're the only school in mainland Asia now certified by two of these. We have this new thing we have. Because people said, well, your school doesn't have a good program. Well, no, two. Not just one, two. Latest research on the brain and how we learn. That the early years, zero, even prenatal, up to five or six. Actually, they look at now 3 to 8 as a developmental stage, but I'd say up to 5 years old. This has got to be hands-on. This is not telling kids about things, this is doing things. in our brain. We now know, we've known it for years, but now the thing is hard data. Before it was through observation. People said, I observed this in children, I observed this in children. Now it's hard data. We put on the magnetic imaging things, it's hard data. Now people can't say, well, that's just your opinion. No, look at this up here. This is hard data. We now know language is that way. We now know kids learning to read and write. The best way to prepare your child to be able to read and write is not do the ABCs and that when they're 3 years old, but to let them put things together. Putting things together here is going to lead to you being able to put symbols together later on. You need the real life experiences. So that is the biggest thing that has said, if you have a curriculum that the kids are sitting around listening to you, it's not what we're supposed to be doing. The kids are supposed to be doing. I am a facilitator. I set up the materials. I work with the kids so they get along with one another. That is my job. My job is not to teach. That's the biggest thing is to say, stay out of the kids' way. Facilitate them. Montessori, I worked with certifying teachers from Montessori in Laos. 90% of what the Montessori curriculum says for certification is exactly what I believe in. 10% is old Maria Montessori stuff that they just keep in. What I've seen, like in a country like Laos, they don't have the background in educational understandings. The teachers tend to go to the 10% that's easy to do manipulation with the kids, teaching, and they focus on that, and not the 90% on how children learn, understanding children and their development. But real Montessori overall now is, but to put it into practice is the biggest thing. Now, education, I could speak forever. Well, no, there's not a one-party system. It's open. We have a party and we have an opposition party. The problem is when you want to get on the ballot, there are 120 seats. We have six that we will allow to be opposition. And we screen those to make sure that we get the kind of seats we want to be opposition seats. So, no, it's two-party system. There are problems, but you know, the government has, any kind of oppression out there, isn't as, the human rights violations that you hear about other countries, it's not as oppressive. There are some things there, but it's not anywhere, it's like anywhere else. Because we've been involved in some cases from parents from our school, and they've gotten released and whatever, so it's okay. I mean, it's not great, but I mean, it's not bad like some of the others are. So it's workable. I'd say it's workable. This is amazing. When I went there, there was no internet. And we had some people, I'm a latecomer in computer stuff. I've lived in villages and things like that. And I have to have my own stuff at home. I can't go somewhere and use someone else's things. So even though I was at the university here for a while, for 5 years, before I, 82 to 87, I was never into the computer things. I was still using my old electric typewriter and things. When I went to Laos, I still had my electric typewriter. And in Laos, if you needed to use a computer, you had to dial into a telephone line from Thailand. And it was quite expensive. There was nothing in Laos. Then it started opening up. And we started getting computers in school. 4 years ago, September 19th, I got my computer. And I went crazy. And 2 years ago, I got a digital camera. And now I have the digital camera, a very good high quality one, which one of the pictures over there. And the yearbook, and asked about school. I have a school yearbook there that we just did. I was the editor, I've been the editor for the last 3 years. A lot of it is digital stuff now, but I kind of went nuts with it. I was in photography before, but I packed up my darkroom stuff. It's being sold this summer. I'm going digital, no more. I could do more in one night than I could do in a half a year before. And so, now, it's cyber cafes are everywhere. Burma is probably one of the few places in the world right now that doesn't allow direct internet connection yet. China's opened up, they're fighting this right now, but Burma is about the only one, and they're probably going to open up now. Well, that's where a lot of camps are in Thailand because of the Burma problem. And Thailand may have a war with Burma. They're having a war, you know, over the border. But Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, elected government or elected president, or they finally are talking with her, at least. So we hope this. I have not gone to Burma on that reason, that I refuse to go there and support. Parents, strictly parents. It's a parents-run school, parents' board, everything. So it's most of our parents are from embassies and from what they call non-government organizations like UNICEF, CARE, Oxfam, all these foundations and things, and United Nations. They're from Sweden. And I have kids from Australia. I have a girl from Canada. It's a real mix of all over. So many of our parents, though, are Asian. Yeah, or bicultural marriage. We have a lot of bicultural kids there. So the dad may be, we have a lot of Germans who come in, or Swedish who come in, who marry a local woman. And so some of the kids may have, like one of the girls there is Finnish Lao. She looks Lao, but her dad is Finnish. Well, if you've ever been in these countries and you see what local schools are basically like, they're benches and a blackboard. And you sit up there and you write and they copy. And I've worked with a lot of the preschools in our area to get them to open up. And our school has been supporting them in materials and things and in working at doing some transition work. They come to visit me a lot. Their teachers will come and spend all day with us. And they come in and they just can't believe what we're doing. But once they're there, they begin to get a sense of how this works. That they don't need to be right on top of everyone all the time. But if you're going to work with children at all, you've got to have materials. That's the biggest thing we talk about. That's why we take anything we don't need or anything the parents don't need, and we give it to someone that we know that can really use it, put it into practice. Because they'll have notebooks, that's the thing. Notebooks and benches. And when I lived in Africa, when I lived in Belize, when I lived in Guatemala, all these places, that's common at that level. You need to get more into the lower levels, more resources.
Thank you. Hey, yep.
It's interesting. I've lived in a lot of countries with a lot of religions, and I always kind of think of when I came, as Ruth said, when I came here, I remember I came and I was at the first thing with George, and then I knew some other people were going to present the next 2 weeks, so I said, well, that was pretty good. No one assaulted me with any dogma or anything. I guess I'll come back next week because I'll have some friends up in front here. I'll still be safe. And I remember talking to Jack Jollings after the third week and said, you know, I think I'm going to sign up in that membership book, you know. This feels good to me. So the religions around the world, we have border disputes, we have everything else. This really felt like the home religion. And so I really feel good to be able to come back. But to feel, knowing in the world, all the stuff that's going on, that there are some religions that do put into affect what they really believe in. Some of them get distorted pretty much. My last one was, there's a couple of these on the table here. This is from the Dalai Lama. It says, this is my simple religion. There is no need for temples, no need for complicated philosophy. Our own brain, our own heart is our temple. The philosophy is kindness. And just simple kinds of things. And I just felt, this is kind of, again, my feelings about Prairie. Just good people, but we have something we believe in, we work together. I thought, wow, if this could be the next major religion in the world, quickly, we need it fast. So I really appreciate being able to come back and the good feelings that I always have with all the people here and the connections that I keep and new people coming in, so it's really nice to see. So thanks for the opportunity to come back and